This is the first episode of The Daily, a new show from The New York Times. We're here because this moment demands an explanation. I'm Michael Barbaro, a reporter at The Times. Over the past decade, I've covered everything from Walmart, they bugged my phone, to Donald Trump's presidential campaign. He demanded I resign. So today, Donald Trump picks a Supreme Court justice who could be shaping American law for decades to come. It's a judge who hasn't publicly shared his views on the big social issues, but we read between the lines of a little-known book he wrote and found a lot of clues. And then we called the man at the center of what may be this judge's single most revealing court case, one that went all the way to possibly his new job at the Supreme Court, if he makes it through the confirmation battle. It's Wednesday, February 1st. It's 8 p.m. on Tuesday night in the East Room of the White House. You've seen this room before. There's a red carpet leading to an empty podium with a presidential seal. Republicans sit on either side of the aisle. The Democrats are boycotting the event. The media waits. The clock strikes 8:02 and out walks President Trump.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
For the first 10 days of this administration, the president and his team have reveled in breaking Washington's rules. Last night, in filling the Supreme Court seat left vacant by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia last year, we saw something different. We saw Trump acting recognizably presidential, both in his demeanor and in his selection.
By nominating Judge Neil Gorsuch.
Neil Gorsuch. Okay. It's just like it's spelled.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Liptak is our chief legal correspondent. He's our authority on the Supreme Court, and he's got the voice to match. You have this, like, kind of amazing history, right? You were you were a lawyer for The New York Times, then became...
The short version is that I practiced First Amendment law basically for 14 years, 10 of it in-house at The New York Times Company. And then I moved down to the newsroom also about 14 years ago.
Right. So you were our lawyer, and then you became our legal writer, like, in the biggest way possible, covering the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Adam, let's start with the very basics. Who is Neil Gorsuch?
Neil Gorsuch is a highly accomplished federal appeals court judge in Denver with a glittering resume, quite conservative, a widely admired writing style.
Like any human enterprise, the law's crooked timber occasionally produces the opposite of the intended effect.
What makes his writing so special?
I read a lot of legal materials, and most of it is deadly.
We turn to the law earnestly to promote a worthy idea.
He writes in English.
And wind up with a host of unwelcome side effects that do more harm than good.
And viewed just from the selfish perspective, and this no one should care about this except maybe the 25 people in the Supreme Court press corps, it would be a pleasure to cover him for 10 years.
We depend upon the rule of law to guarantee freedom, but we have to give up freedom to live under the law's rules.
So he seems to have a very traditional pedigree for a Supreme Court justice, right?
Yes.
After Harvard, he received his doctorate at Oxford.
So we have on this current Supreme Court, and many people have criticized this, a very elite group. We have every single member of the Supreme Court attended Harvard or Yale Law School, even though there are many, many good law schools in the land. And that doesn't fit very closely with the populist tendencies of President Trump, but it's conceivable that it would make it easier for him to join his colleagues at the Supreme Court should he be confirmed.
Okay, so it feels like the best way to understand a judge is through some of the most telling court cases they've ruled on, where they grapple with the really big issues. I want to dissect with you, Adam, a single case that Gorsuch ruled on. It became a very famous case when it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. It was Hobby Lobby Stores versus the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Can you tell us about that case?
Yeah, Hobby Lobby.
Hobby Lobby, the Oklahoma-based arts and crafts chain, is owned by devout Christians, the Green family.
It asks the question of whether a craft store...
They believe those drugs induce abortions.
...controlled by a family...
These abortion-causing drugs go against our faith.
...should have to provide contraception coverage, which they said, and this is scientifically controversial, was tantamount to abortion.
We simply cannot abandon our religious beliefs to comply with this mandate.
They didn't want to do that. Regulations under the Affordable Care Act said they had to do it. Judge Gorsuch said the family had a right to decline to follow their religious beliefs, and the Supreme Court...
It is a 5-4 decision in favor of Hobby Lobby.
...affirmed that view by a 5-4 vote.
Justice has just issued a landmark ruling on religious freedom and Obamacare. The family-owned craft store chain Hobby Lobby claimed it shouldn't have to pay for contraception for its employees as part of the Affordable Care Act. They said it would violate the company's religious beliefs, and today the justices agreed.
So Gorsuch hasn't said anything about abortion, which is such an important issue to so many. Adam, you found a document that may, in a really indirect way, tell us about how he views it.
So Judge Gorsuch has written a serious book on euthanasia and assisted suicide. Obviously not the same thing as abortion, but in the same general zone about how we treat human life. And in that book, his basic argument is that we need to take human life very seriously, and that might lead you to think he would have similar views in the abortion context.
There's a quote from the book that I want to read you because it feels telling. All human beings are intrinsically valuable, and the intentional taking of human life by persons is always wrong. Can we read that as an implicit opposition to abortion?
It goes in that direction, Michael. Now, you know, it doesn't answer the question which many people struggle with about when does human life begin, and that may be said to be a separate question, but it certainly indicates a high level of sensitivity to these issues, and if you had to guess, it would mean that he might have serious qualms about abortion. Now, the other thing to ask, though, is not questions of moral philosophy or science, but rather whether he might find a right to abortion in the Constitution. And because he's an originalist, and he has said the Constitution's not an ink blot onto which we can will our policy preferences. So for that separate reason, I think the right probably has no particular worries that Judge Gorsuch will go soft on the issue of abortion.
Hello.
Mr. Green, it's Michael Barbaro from the New York Times. How are you?
Yes. Go ahead. How can I help you?
After I hung up with Adam Liptak, I called David Green. Where am I reaching you? Are you in transit?
Yes, I'm in my car, but I'm in Oklahoma City.
On business?
Yes. Going to one of the stores.
David Green, he's the owner of Hobby Lobby. By now, you probably know that Judge Gorsuch, who ruled in the Hobby Lobby case, is on the top of President Trump's list of people to be on the Supreme Court. And I kind of wondered, do you see Judge Gorsuch as a defender of your values?
Well, obviously we do in this case. I don't know all about him, but I know that he defended us in this, and we received an injunction because of him. And we received it on a Friday, and it was on the following Monday that our new insurance policy would have to go into effect. So we're very grateful that he ruled in our case.
So this case for you was all about the First Amendment.
Yes.
Right?
I like to be left alone as a businessman and do my business without the government interfering. And so we had to sue the government or take life. That was our two choices. And so we didn't want to sue our government. We love this country. But we were forced to do that. And now we're back to running our business.
When you say take life, just because some of our listeners might want some clarity on that, you mean by providing contraception?
We believe life begins at conception. And we believe these four pills they were asking us to pay for could take life. And God created that life, and we feel like it would totally be wrong for us to take life that he's created. And we believe that that could be the case with these four pills that they were asking us to provide. When we were providing, and the liberal press will never say this, they will never say that we offered 16 different contraceptives, and I don't see you doing it, and I don't see you telling them the public that we pay 2/3 of the people's insurance, that our minimum wage for full-time people is $15.35, that we have a clinic that takes care of everybody's health for free that has our insurance. That way you guys won't write because it doesn't fit your narrative, does it?
Well, the beauty of audio is that you're saying it and our listeners are hearing it. So I promise you that I am hearing it, and we're going to make sure that people understand it. Judge Scalia ruled in your favor, and the judge that Donald Trump will appoint, Judge Gorsuch would take his seat. So it feels like that would probably provide you some comfort and maybe even a cushion if this issue comes back up again.
You know, I would hope so. And that's why we voted for Trump. Not that we agree with everything he does, and I won't go down all those rabbit trails, but it means that the most important thing to us was the fact that we knew he would put someone there that ruled on the Constitution. Because if you ruled on the Constitution, it would be obvious that we would not have to be forced to do something and that we would have our religious liberty.
So just to be clear, because I feel like you did say this, but it kind of came up in a different question, you did support Donald Trump for president, right?
I did, for my number one reason is that I could run my business without the government telling me that I have to take life. And I knew that he would be the only one that would put a Supreme Court justice in there that would do that. Otherwise, I feel like that I would be right back to where I was with anybody else other than Trump.
The last question is, you've talked about life, and now we're going to have a new Supreme Court justice. Do you want to see that justice, and do you want to see Donald Trump overturn Roe v. Wade?
I would prefer to stick with this subject right here that we're talking about, okay?
You're totally within your rights.
I would say to you that you need to go where you want to with the fact that I believe that God has created an individual, and to take that life for any of us is wrong. I think that's all I need to say.
Okay. Well, good luck with your store visit, and thanks for spending some time with us.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. It may be a sign of things to come that there were no Democratic lawmakers in the room when Neil Gorsuch was nominated for the Supreme Court. But how fiercely will these missing Democrats fight him in the Senate?
Trump wants to be able to say, look at this beautiful nominee that I picked. He's just the best at his job.
Carl is already a master in Trump lingo, so it's a beautiful nominee, and he's the best.
It was seamless, Carl. Just 10 days it took you. Carl Hulse and Maggie Haberman are in our Washington bureau. Carl is the dean of congressional reporters, and Maggie is the best sourced reporter covering the White House. So, Carl, we've now got our nominee. Let's talk about how this confirmation process is going to unfurl. Trump said in his speech announcing Judge Gorsuch that his choice has tremendous bipartisan support. Is that accurate?
No, and we don't know that. I will say that his nominee already has 52 votes. He starts out with 52. I didn't get any sense from any Republican that there's going to be any kind of problem. The big decision is those next eight. He's got to get eight more, 60, to be able to overcome, you know, a filibuster. And I was surprised because Gorsuch's reputation is pretty solid. And, you know, he's being seen as the Republican Merrick Garland, the centrist nominee that the Democrats didn't get a vote on. And I think he's going to be hard to resist for some of these Democrats. I think it's going to be tough, but they're under extreme pressure from their base to fight Trump on everything.
But Carl, when it comes to the forces that are going to influence Democrats, you described the pressure they're going to face from outside groups who want to defeat them. But it would seem to me that the countervailing force of just like pure bileful anger over what happened to Merrick Garland would be as powerful, if not more powerful. I mean, are Democrats out for revenge regardless of who the candidate is?
Well, they're trying to act like they're not. I mean, you're going to hear a lot from this. We're going to hear a lot about this. We're going to study his record. You know, we're not making any instantaneous decisions. We want to meet with him and weigh it. They're not going to do what the Republicans say no, because they know that looks bad. They want this to look reasoned, measured.
I think that's right. I think that there's look, Democrats are in a tremendous bind with Trump because some of them do need to cooperate with him on certain things, and they are getting enormous pressure. If you turn on your television and look at the protests, there's a protest right now in Brooklyn, I understand, outside of Chuck Schumer's home. It's several hundred people.
Really?
There is a lot of that going on right now. There's an enormous amount of organic frustration. It might not be particularly well organized. It might not be completely well directed, but it is there. And so you have senators who are feeling a lot of pressure to be oppositional and be part of what is being described as the resistance. At the end of the day, as Carl said, I don't think it will matter in terms of the confirmation, but I think you will see this play out for a time.
You know, you've already seen the progressives don't think the Democrats were tough enough in the cabinet nominate confirmation fights. But, you know, this is going to take place over the next few months. This will go into spring and maybe summer. So there's a lot of cards to be played.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that I was very struck by this over the weekend. Elizabeth Warren, I think, did some Facebook page. Somebody responded with a comment attacking her. I think it was on her Facebook page. It was somewhere, but attacking her over not being tougher on Ben Carson in one of the hearings. And the idea that Elizabeth Warren is not passing a purity test on the left is really telling you
right
where we've moved since November 8th, 2016.
I want to ask you, what does Donald Trump want his Supreme Court legacy to be?
I don't think he's thought that far, Michael. I really don't. I mean, I think that what he would like it to be is that gay marriage does not get overturned in some way. I know that he has talked about Roe v. Wade being of deep significance. I'm very skeptical of that. I don't think it's necessarily a lawsuit-by-lawsuit basis, but I think on a broader scale, I think that he would like a court that if it was hearing issues related to corporations or donations, you know, would rule a certain way. I think that, candidly, I don't think that he's particularly in favor of Citizens United based on how he attacked super PACs as useless. I think that he would like a court that does not move particularly hard on social issues. I think he would like that to be his legacy.
So a pro-business court.
Yeah, and I think yes, he wants to, you know, get rid of some regulation.
Yeah, that's right.
But I do think that you've touched on something. I think one of the things you're going to hear from Democrats a lot is that the issue with this nominee now isn't as much about what his particular views are. It's how much is he willing to stand up to Donald Trump.
Yes.
Because of what's gone on over the past few days, people are now saying, we have to know that this nominee is willing to tell the administration that they're acting in an unconstitutional way. If he can't convince Democrats that he's going to do that, he's going to have trouble. However, if he can convince Democrats that he's going to be someone who's not afraid of the administration, I mean, maybe they'll roll the dice and put him in there. But I think that's something you're going to hear a lot about in the next few months.
I agree with that.
That's going to be the dominant question in the nomination hearings.
Yes.
Carl, Maggie, thank you very much.
It's an honor to be on the inaugural episode.
It is an honor to be on the inaugural episode.
That's about it for The Daily. Here's what we're watching. The internal dissent is growing in Washington. Democrats are trying to stall President Trump's nominations by not showing up when they're supposed to vote. They skipped the vote on his picks for Treasury and Health Secretary this week. And they're pushing to block his nominee for Attorney General, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, in revenge for Trump firing the acting Attorney General, Sally Yates, for not defending his immigration order. And at the State Department, more than 1,000 diplomats have signed a document criticizing their new boss for that order. It temporarily bans immigration from 7 mostly Muslim countries. At the White House, the president's press secretary is furious at the mall, delivering an unusually blunt ultimatum.
I think that they should either get with the program or they can go.
These are extraordinary sentences, and these feel like unusually historic times. It's that feeling that we're in the middle of something big and we don't know where it's going. We have a voicemail set up at The Daily. We'll use it to ask you questions, and we'll share some of your stories on the show. So on this first day of the show, our first question. When was the first time you felt this way? Like your life was intersecting with history? I'll tell you mine. It was 2003, and I had just moved to Washington. I was a reporter at The Washington Post, and the war in Iraq, the second one, was breaking out. I set up 2 televisions and a radio, and I sat there, and I watched the invasion. When did you first feel part of history? Call us and leave a message, 30 seconds or less, at 646-694-1839. I look forward to hearing them. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.